Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This week, we had the deadliest day of the year in Iraq. A series of coordinated attacks reportedly by Al-Qaeda are perhaps just another reminder that the U.S. war on terror is far from over. 10 years since September 11th, and terrorism remains a concern for millions of Americans all across the country. How to solve the problem of terrorism, though, is still an issue of debate. Although the gentleman who now joins us thinks we may have solved some parts of that issue, Eric Schmidt is a reporter for our partner, The New York Times, and he joins us now in studio. His new book is called Counterstrike, The Untold Story of America's Secret Campaign Against Al-Qaeda. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning.
This book is packed with details and incredible inside stories about what goes on behind the scenes in our counterintelligence in Pakistan and in Afghanistan. But let's walk through a few things. You start the book with this idea that the Osama bin Laden raid could not have happened in the days after 9/11. Why is that?
The reason was shortly after 9/11, there was very little known about Al-Qaeda and terrorist networks in general within the United States government. And the instinctive reaction after the 9/11 attacks was to try and kill and capture terrorists wherever they might be. Within a couple of years, though, that became quite clear that the terrorist networks were much more resilient, much more adaptive than the American government thought. They were able to replenish their ranks of fighters. The leaders that were killed were able to move up and be replaced. And Al-Qaeda in particular was seen as a much more adaptive, innovative enemy. To the point where by late 2003, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld sent a memo to his top aides saying, are we actually creating more militants, more fighters than we're killing? And this was kind of an epiphany for Rumsfeld, and kind of an unlikely one for somebody given his reputation. And so what was going on, what he and others in the Pentagon later found out, was that there were efforts within the government, within the Pentagon specifically, to see if they could counter this in a new and different way. And Rumsfeld was looking for new and different ways after he kind of came to this conclusion. And as it turned out, in the policy shop of the Pentagon, there was a young guy, a young doctoral student, who we describe in our book as kind of a Hollywood handsome guy from California, who worked with a career policymaker and a policy wonk within the government. And together, along with many aides, they were looking at a new strategy for how you take down terrorists. And it was the idea of how you adapt traditional Cold War deterrence, that is the whole theory and philosophy that basically the United States used to help contain the Soviet Union during the Cold War. What elements of that might be adapted to the current day counterterrorism fight? And while there were certain points where people looked at this and said initially, well, this can't be. I mean, how do you deter an undeterrable suicide bomber?
Right.
Or somebody?
President Bush himself often said that you can't stop a terrorist who's intent on killing himself and other people.
That's right. But what these guys working in the bowels of the government, in the bowels of the Pentagon really discovered, was there were things that terrorists found dear, their personal reputations, their personal glory. And the other important thing that they realized was that terrorists don't operate alone. They have a network that supports them. Just as bin Laden, when he eventually was killed, it was a courier that led the U.S. military and the commandos to that safe house in Abbottabad, Pakistan. So what the theorists now looked at and said, well, look, well, there may be undeterrable suicide bombers, and bin Laden himself might be undeterrable, but the people around him, the enablers, we're calling them in this book, the financiers, the gun runners, the logisticians, these people are in it largely for the money, and they don't want to die. And so if you can put pressure on them and either take them out or threaten them in such a way that they don't participate in this terrorist act, that's taking a vital link out of the chain that the terrorists depend on to carry out their attacks.
One of the things that you take away from this book is that you kind of see both the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq as sort of a knee-jerk reaction which created problems rather than solved them. And that may be, in the end, how history views those two particular conflicts. But you talk a lot about this effort to win hearts and minds. And even that portion of it, which was an evolution coming out of the lack of success in Afghanistan and Iraq, even going to the strategy of winning hearts and minds, that has changed over the 10 years since 9/11. How so?
It has, and that actually has been one of the areas that where the U.S. government and others in the West have really struggled, because the initial reaction was on the part of the government and those within the counterterrorism part of the State Department, which carries out diplomacy for the U.S., is that we'll just polish the image of the United States, and if we can just convince people that the United States is well-meaning enough and looking after their own—
Build schools
and wells and all that, you know, people will come around to us and they'll come around to our thinking. Well, this, again, showed the real lack of understanding of the anger and antipathy toward the United States in many Muslim countries and among many Muslim youths. And these, of course, were the fodder for the recruits for al-Qaeda and other terrorist networks. So it was, again, trying to understand that you can't just polish the image of the United States. Yes, it's important to have exchange programs and bring scholars here on Fulbright scholarships, for instance, the United States, so they can be better understand this country and send them back. But there needs to be a more aggressive countermeasure taken to undermine the message of al-Qaeda. And the message that al-Qaeda has is a very simple but effective one, and that is that the West, the United States, is at war with Islam. So how do you counteract that? Certainly an American voice on that is not going to be credible on the
right.
Muslim street. So you have to find credible Muslim voices to counteract that, to undercut that message and engage them in all forums, whether it's in the mosques or on the internet. And that's very tricky because while the U.S. may want to support those, if any hint of that support is revealed, then that source becomes tainted. So this is something that has to be done in secret in many ways.
And there's one final lesson, which is actually not for the Pentagon, but is for the average American, and that's that terrorism is not going away. I mean, with you point out to the fact that people react with shock and horror every single time there's a terrorist incident, even if it's unsuccessful, as though at some point we should simply be safe from any terrorist attempt.
Right, and I think there's a temptation with the death of bin Laden to say, okay, ball game's over, the boogeyman of al-Qaeda is dead, and we can go on with our lives now, when it's very clear that that bin Laden's successor, Ayman al-Zawahiri, has already issued several videos vowing to continue the fight from his refuge in the Pakistani tribal areas. But more significantly, you have now a number of affiliates, these branches of al-Qaeda that
like
have sprouted
in
places like Yemen, which U.S. counterterrorism officials say is actually much more of a threat to the U.S., than what's coming out of Pakistan. You have other arms branches in Somalia. There's a resurgence of al-Qaeda now in Iraq, in northern Africa, and even growing concern here in the United States of individuals who are radicalized over the internet, oftentimes through English-speaking preachers, somebody like Anwar al-Awlaki, an American-born cleric who's now in hiding in Yemen. These are appealing to people over the internet, carry out attacks against the U.S. wherever you are, however you can. Small-scale attacks in addition to the large-scale mass casualty-type attacks that we saw in 9/11 that the al-Qaeda, main al-Qaeda in Pakistan, will continue to pursue.
All right. Eric Schmidt is the co-author of the new book, Counter-Strike, The Untold Story of America's Secret Campaign Against al-Qaeda. Tom Shanker is the other author of the book, both reporters for our partner, The New York Times. Thanks so much, Eric.
You're welcome. Thank you, Celeste.
Do you feel safer 10 years after 9/11, the attacks that changed so much? We'll have more conversations as we approach the 10th anniversary. What are your memories from that fateful day? And what is your takeaway on America's influence overseas? Is the fight on terror something that goes on long after 9/11, or is it something that is winnable? 877-8-MY-TAKE. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.